Hi, this is Hannes, and I want to thank you very much for all your support of Storyworthy and your recommendations to your friends. And maybe you don't even like Storyworthy. Maybe you find us incredibly irritating. Recommend it to your enemies. We don't care where the numbers come from, people. Cough right in your face.
Hi, this is Dean Haglund from Chillpack Hollywood Hour. And I don't mean to spread a conspiracy theory, but you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn and I'm here with...
It's Hannes Finney, and I'm coughing because we're in Russia right now. We're at Edward Snowden's apartment in Moscow. There's no heat at all.
Oh, my gosh. Okay,
you know why we're at Edward Snowden's apartment? Because he's the most famous hacker in the world.
Okay.
He's the guy who released all the NSA documents.
Okay.
And now got asylum in Russia.
All right. So, and our topic tonight is hackers. And it's brought forth from Dean Haglund, the amazing actor and now a comedian as well.
Comedian and podcast host. And,
many of you super nerds
out there know that he spent, I believe, 9 years on The X-Files.
It's true.
As one of the gunman.
Lone gunman.
I'm sorry. The lone gunman. I apologize.
Yeah, he was one of the lone gunmen, and then, of course, that show spun off into its own thing.
Into its own show. I want to hear about that.
And I want to ask him about that. There's some fascinating stuff about that show that paralleled 9/11. I don't know if you realize that, Hannes, but they had storylines on the lone gunmen that, 8 months before those planes hit the World Trade Center.
Oh, so you were involved. He was involved. Okay, so he's obviously behind the conspiracy, and we'll blow it all up right now.
All right. Tonight, folks, Dean Haglund is here, and he does bring forth the topic hackers. And what I learned when I was thinking, about hackers, I didn't know there were so many
All I can think about is my cough when I hear the word hackers. That's
there's
all
so many
can...
different color hackers. Did you know that, Hannes?
Hackers? I have no idea what that means.
Differently. Okay, so like a hacker, as we know, is someone who seeks and exploits weaknesses in a computer system or in a network, right?
Right.
And they're motivated by many different reasons. It could be profit or protest or challenge. But then within that, there are many different colors, like a white hat hacker. Now, that would be somebody who breaks into security for non-malicious reasons, maybe testing their own security system. Remember the guy we had on our program, Moran Cerf?
Yeah.
He was a hacker, and he worked for many different companies.
Right.
No, but the term white hat, it's like a slang referring to like an ethical hacker. That's why it's like they're white, right?
So sure.
It's like
I see why they got to be white. Huh?
Well,
hockey?
As long as you brought it up, there's something called the black hat hacker.
Now, does he use a gun? Is this just a word for carjacking?
This is a hacker who violates computer security for little reason beyond maliciousness or for personal gain. So this is what they call a bad guy, Hannes.
This is what they call guys who live in their basement.
Yeah,
the kind of guy that Bruce Willis would go to and say, listen, I need your help, punk.
This is like the epitome of what the public fears in computer criminal activity. And this is also something that would be like portrayed in popular culture. If you talk about a hacker, usually
It's some evil mastermind. And it was just, I just was watching that. Speaking of movies, so Skyfall was on Netflix now.
Right.
And Javier Bardem is like this guy. He's like a super hacker. And it's like the worst, least cinematic villain in the world. It's like, look at me and my keyboard.
Yeah.
And you go click, 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 enter. Now I've stolen a lot of money. That wasn't very visual, though, with the stealing the money, no.
Well, I don't know. With Javier Bardem, he's got a really, interesting
face. No, I know. When he's fighting James Bond, that's great. When he's sitting typing, it's not so much.
I see what you're saying. Well, the black hat hackers, those guys are also referred to as crackers. If you can imagine that. So this is...
safe crackers.
Well, it's within the security industry. Exactly. They keep the awareness of vulnerabilities to themselves.
So what are some of the medium colors?
Gray. There's a gray hat hacker right there.
What's
now, that's a combination of the black hat hacker and the white hat hacker. Sometimes they're good guys and sometimes they're not.
You just made this up, didn't you?
No, this is all very true.
Oh, it's all real. Okay.
But a gray hat hacker, their sole purpose is notifying the administrator... the administrator of the system that, in fact, their system has a security defect. So they might go in, again, and looking for problems.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we have something called an elite hacker. An elite hacker. This would be the top of the line hacker. The most skilled is really these folks are what they're called, Hannes. They're the masters of deception. That's what they are.
Really?
That's exactly right.
You don't even know they exist. They don't even have a hat.
Right.
They don't have a color.
They don't even have a hat. They have no color, and there's no
hat.
They
cannot be
seen.
They're
just elite. And then on the other side of the elite hacker would be like a skiddy or a skid hacker or a script kiddie. There's a lot of different words you can use, and this is somebody who
is like... dirty.
They do sound dirty, right? This is a non-expert who breaks into computer systems by using prepackaged automated tools written by others. So they don't really have an understanding
this
of what they're
like
doing.
This would be like Sandra Bullock in The Net or Whoopi Goldberg in Jumpin' Jack Flash, which was on TV the other day. And it's like, she's the most sophisticated computer. And her computer is like a Commodore 64.
Yeah, right.
And it's like she's typing with two fingers. And it's like, I'm breaking into the Pentagon. Boop,
now, see,
boop,
what she
boop.
Was, she was a newbie, or what they call a neophyte. That's a newbie, somebody who's new at hacking or freaking. You ever hear that term, Hannes? Not twerking.
Not outside my freaking. Pants.
And this person has absolutely no knowledge or experience in the workings of technology. And they're
just causing trouble, and they don't even know what kind of trouble.
And then there's one more color hat I wanted to bring up.
Okay.
And that is a blue hat. A blue hat hacker is someone outside computer security consulting firms who use it to, like, they bug test a system prior to its launch. So they're looking for exploits before it's actually launched.
Yeah, they're a version of the white.
Right.
For
so
the thing. Yeah.
You know, all this stuff, Hannes, as I in my head, it didn't used to exist.
No, it didn't. And what I think is weird, because when you emailed me the topic, I was like, the only thing I know about hacking is that now everybody's involved in it. Because, you know, if you have an email you haven't used in a while or whatever, or on Facebook, suddenly your friend will say, hey, do you want your own computer? They're giving away computers or this or that. And then 3 days later, your friend puts up a post that says, I was hacked. Do
right.
not open any of these things. It's like, so now it's not just corporations. It just happens to people randomly.
Well, it almost seems like it's a practice among some companies. And it's like, it's just one of their tactics to get people to sign up for whatever.
True. I didn't
in
even
other
think
words,
of that,
they're
yeah.
just going on Facebook and they're saying, well, you know, Hannes Finney likes this, so you will too. I mean, it's really incestuous, all of it, isn't it?
Well, yeah, like I mentioned this before. It's like I rented one movie from Redbox. The next day, there's like offers a free a suggested post on my Facebook page is from Redbox, and it's a free trial for their streaming. And it's like I didn't put any of my information in the Redbox.
Right.
I just used my debit card.
It's really scary.
And they
isn't
just
it?
Found that they found yeah they found
from your debit
they found
card.
Me just like that. But you know what? I think. That we should, first of all, you know where you could find some good anti-hacking books?
Where?
Amazon.com.
Oh, right, Amazon.com. And you know, folks, if you'd like to help out Storyworthy, hey, maybe you're Christmas shopping. What do I know? You know?
Sure.
Then what you do is you go over to StoryworthyPodcast.com and you click on our Amazon ad because it, in fact, helps the show.
It does help the show. We get a little taste. We do not judge any of your,
purchases. You always
purchases.
Say that.
But it's always anonymous.
We don't see their purchases.
We don't know what your purchases are.
The point is it helps
maybe
support the
show.
Maybe
you're not Christmas shopping. Maybe you're a Jew.
There's other ways to support the show as well. For instance, you can just go right over to our StoryworthyPodcast.com and just go ahead and donate money to Hannes's filthy mouth.
Right, right. Or there, we also have now a monthly, basically, subscriber program where you can give 5 or 10 or 15 or whatever you would want a month. And really, you won't notice it, and it really does help us. We're totally
us
serious about this. I have my serious face on.
That is a serious face.
I might drop my pants, but I have a serious
you
face.
You can support the show is to leave us a good review at iTunes. That always helps.
That doesn't cost you a thing.
That doesn't cost
cheap
it's like
bastard.
The least you can do, really.
Yes, it's literally the least you could possibly do. Just go to iTunes and go and leave us a review that says, I like this show. That's all
help.
You have to write.
That's it. All right, you guys. So listen, Dean Haglund is here, and there's so much to talk about.
I know. Let's get him in here. He knows more about hacking than
knowledge.
We do.
Yeah, folks, so wherever you are, please stay tuned because Dean Haglund is on his way here. Next week on Storyworthy, we have writer, podcaster, Caleb Bacon.
And I'll be talking about a road trip with my mom.
That's next week on Storyworthy.
Hi, this is Chris Magaha, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
We're back we've been kicked out of Edward Stone's apartment, but now we're at a Pizza Hut in downtown Moscow, and it's very confusing.
You know, it's so fucking wrong how there are Pizza Huts all over the goddamn world, and people think of it as like American food. They think in America we eat at Pizza Hut. I do not eat at Pizza Hut.
No. Well, you remember that thing, last month, several months ago. It was a new thing at Pizza Hut in Saudi Arabia. They developed their own pizza, which the entire crust was not cheese-filled. It was cheeseburgers.
Oh, my gosh.
Around the outside of the pizza. And we're like, to them, it's all just American food.
Look, if they put a tomato pie over there in Moscow, I'm all for it. But not Pizza Hut.
Tomato pie?
Tomato
what the
pie.
Hell is
it's
that?
It's in Silver Lake, California. Best pizza
hipster
in Los Angeles.
Bullshit.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You know who's trying to hack into us? Dean Haglund. He was trying to come through the glass of our studio. He was like, I want to hack. But we'll let him talk and he can talk all of his stuff.
All right, you guys. Dean Haglund is here right now. He is an actor, a writer, a performer, and an artist. You might remember him from his role of Richard Ringo Langley, one of the lone gunmen on The X-Files, like we said. And of course, that show got spun off into The Lone Gunman. And right now, Dean has a podcast. Jesus, he's had this show for 7 years. So it's not just like right now. It's ongoing.
Yes, he's a podcast pioneer. His earliest episodes are available on Telegraph. That's how old.
It's called the Chilpack Hollywood Hour, where he discusses all things Hollywood. Folks, you can find Dean on Twitter at @DHagland. Wherever you are, please put your hands together for Dean Haglund.
Thank you. Now, I played a computer hacker on TV, and played is the operative word. I didn't actually hack anything. I didn't actually get into any government facilities. I was an actor who had a keyboard that when I hit the buttons, a screen would come up that artists had already pre-created. Now, this is a very important fact because as the show became popular, hackers for real started talking to me and they started coming into my life. And even now today, this is now how many years later? 20. It's been the 20th anniversary at Comic-Con this year of the X-Files first season. I can tell what country is rerunning the X-Files based on IP intrusion attacks on my website. So anytime these 13-year-old kids in Estonia see me, they go, "Hey, Dean Haglund." They look me up and they go on my website and make it non-functional. And it happens over and over again. So this all started way back in 93. So 1993, I actually had my own website. I was hand coding HTML back when I think CompuServe couldn't even give you your name for your email. My first email was actually 1032.327 at CompuServe.com because they didn't have the ability to actually put your name. So that's how long I've been on the internet. And back then, hacking, the encryption was only like 64 bits. So if even you got into a website, all you could basically do was change the color. There was no, that you couldn't do any transactions. There was no PayPal back then, any of that stuff. So I became like one of the first TV hackers. I was this focal point. And then I met online a lot of these guys that were doing it for real and jumped to 2001. The Lone Gunman spinoff happens, right? So now we have our own series, and my wife at that time was super paranoid. So she had made sure that the phone numbers and the deeds to all the rental places were all in her name. She kept her own last name, so my name wasn't included, and we're shooting the series up in Vancouver. And the very first week we're shooting, the phone rings in the apartment. She's at home by herself, picks it up, goes, "Yeah, is Dean there?" She goes, "Who's this?" "I can't tell you." She's like, "What?" And then she hangs up the phone, right? She calls me at work. She goes, "Oh, my God." She had had caller ID, said, "Call this number. This guy somehow knows that we're living together. I don't know." This freaked her out. So I go into the production office. I go way into the back to a room that's not used. I call the number. It's San Francisco-based. I go, "Hi, this is Dean." He goes, "Hey, this is Isaac, with Ninja Strike Force." "Ninja Strike Force? Yeah, we're that hacker group. We're always at DEF CON, which is the big hacking convention in Vegas." "Hey, yeah, I was just, hey, wait, can I call you back on another line?" Okay. So I hang up the phone, and just as I'm about to yell to the receptionist, route that call through me, the phone rings in the office. He somehow bypasses the receptionist. I don't know how he does that. I go, how did you do that? He goes, dude, I'm a hacker. What do you think? I can do this sort of thing. So like now freaked out, I go, okay, so what do you want? What are you going to do to me? He goes, no, I was just wondering if you would wear our T-shirt on the show. Yeah, we got this really cool Ninja Strike Force T-shirt. It'd be really cool if Langley wore that shirt in an episode. I'm like, yeah, okay, send it up. I mean, it was a load off your mind, but holy smokes, the lengths that this guy went through, right? So this then carried on from time to time, and there would be different things. So every time I would set up a website, then suddenly the pages would not be functioning. Suddenly you would click on something, it would go to a completely different site, and I would have to take out the links. And then I actually hired a security firm for $200 a month to like prevent any of this thing from happening, and it still happened. They somehow went past this whole thing, so it was a big waste of money. So then I get to last year, 2012. I go to a convention in Colorado Springs, Colorado, right? And it's a massive pop culture sci-fi convention, many stars there, and it's run by a guy who used to work at NORAD. He has RS-23 security clearance, and he was a PHP programmer for NORAD and done the whole thing. So he had just retired, and now as his retirement thing was running sci-fi conventions. Now, the sci-fi convention was run by a board, and the board insisted that they do WordPress so that everybody can be involved in creating the website. And that also included the website, a bunch of different PayPal buttons that had donate now and buy tickets to this show and see this autograph and that sort of thing. So he was a little resistant, but, you know, he agreed to the board, and he sets up that website. So I tell him all of my stories of Ninja Strike Force and all these hackers and Estonian teenagers bugging me all the time and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, whatever, thinking like I'm just, you know, pulling his leg or whatever. And on Saturday afternoon, I'm in my room in between events, and I get a call from him, and he goes, dude, are you in your room? Yeah, I'm in my room. Okay, I can't tell you this over the phone. Just in the hotel, I can't tell you this over the phone, so I'm coming to your room. And he hangs up, and he knocks on my door 2 minutes later, and he goes, okay, so I thought you were bullshitting me, but the FBI is here because our website got hacked, and it got hacked really well. We traced it. It's been filtered through Sri Lanka, like the IP addresses. They're doing some sort of clever funneling thing. And it turns out that if you put too many PayPal buttons on your site, you can triangulate the bank account. So they got in the bank account and withdrew $3,000, basically stole $3,000 from the convention. So that's why the FBI had to come. And the FBI said, listen, what we're going to need is the IP addresses and a log sheet, like a log rollout of all the people that have been in the site. Okay, so he gets in and he types that out. And as it's coming out, there's thousands of all these numbers. And then in between a big blank space, it just says, say hi to Dean Haglund for us. And then more IP addresses. And it's like, Dean Haglund's not a real hacker. And then more IP addresses. And it's like, Dean Haglund is not as cute as Gillian Anderson. Like, it just went taunting me all through this, knowing full well that the FBI was going to have to look at this. And he said, holy shit, I thought you were kidding. Yeah. But now I'm totally afraid. Like, he was like totally freaked out, and he said, I hate to say it, but you're never coming back to convention here because you seem to be the target of that sort of thing. And then he gave me a number of a guy who does security for Wall Street, and I emailed that guy and I said, look, I can't specify exactly what the problem is, but I have these hackers from around the world that just know me and a thing. And he said, yeah, I can't really help you. And these security guys even know that it's a cat and mouse game, and that, you know, you would think playing a hacker on TV would be the sort of thing that would get you all these accolades and all, and in fact, it makes you a target, which is kind of a double-edged sword.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Isn't that fascinating?
It is fascinating. I mean, they know you're an actor.
Yeah, and they know
that. But people don't. You know how that is. Like, people think...
Like if
that,
you play a doctor
they think
on
that,
TV,
that, that, yes. that Gillian Anderson really works for the FBI, or they think that, you know, Archie Bunker, okay, there's a reference for you kids. Yeah. You know, it was really a bigot.
There was an X-Files episode where we fixed a television and a guy, my friend, another actor, goes, hey, my TV's on the blink, actually. Could you come over?
And he's an actor.
He's an actor.
What the hell is wrong with him?
I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not going to come over and fix your TV.
Do you remember when you auditioned for the X-Files? Do you remember that?
Yes, I certainly do. That was crazy because they didn't know what the gunmen were supposed to be, right? It was the Glenn Morgan and James Wrong had written these characters that were like, one is weird and one's maybe in a suit. And so they had like all these different characters and they all, you know. And so the audition room was like 55 people. And a lot of
all looking different.
All looking different.
And you look like Garth from Wayne's World.
Yeah, I had the long hair, but I didn't have the glasses at the time. So I came in and there was other improvisers and stand-ups that I knew. And then there were like bald Marines and camouflage. Like, and there was like all these.
They don't know what they want.
They didn't know what they want. So I come in and I read. And I think it's a stupid audition because in the audition, I'm on the phone half the time. Like hacking, so in the middle of that scene, the very first scene, I have to be on the phone, and so the two auditioners are just talking to each other. So I have this
just listening
glazed look. Yeah,
but you're listening.
But I'm totally listening. But I'm supposed to be on the phone doing some other hacking of some sort, right? So anyway, they keep calling me back, and I'm reading with other guys in suits, and including Gary Jones, who later became Walter Harriman on Stargate SG-1. Okay. So like all these sci-fi stars had come in to read to sort of set up the gunman. And it turns out that when we finally get to set, I meet Bruce Harwood, the guy who played Byers in the suit, for the very first time. I'd never read with him before. And then I go, who did they get to be Frohickey? And he said, yeah, they had real trouble, so they just got the first AD.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy.
What?
They took a crew guy?
Yeah, but he had acting experience.
I hope
He trained as an actor, but he had two kids, so he took a crew job, and now he's... And because it was just going to be one line, and we weren't going to be recurring characters, they thought, I'd just get the first AD to say the one line. But then became so popular, and at that time, because it was early internet... There was a news group called Alt TV X-Files, and Chris Carter and all the writers were lurking in that site. So as soon as the gunman showed up, everybody in the news group went ballistic, going, aha, this proves
that's
the producer's a writer in there. Yeah, so they were like actually fueling comments by bringing the gunman back over and over again. So
they were hacking into their own show show a different perspective.
Absolutely, and then they were even taking lines from the news group and having us say them.
Wow.
Oh, so that then they all, you know, they went mental.
See, that's the thing about show business. Like, you literally don't know what the audition's going to lead to. You don't know
exactly. You're not going, hey, you know, if I say this one line, it'll go to a super series.
Did the assistant director then, did that AD end up being the actor on the show, and then he was never the AD on the X-Files?
No, he continued to be the AD.
He continued to be the AD and an actor.
Yeah.
So he's getting paid twice, paychecks.
Two paychecks.
Good for him.
I know, right? And they, because the shows were so production heavy, they made them look like movies, they actually had two ADs. So one would be prepping and then ADing, and then the other would be prepping and ADing. So it'd be
Confuse guest actors on the show? One of the regulars on the show is telling them to hurry the fuck up and finish their omelet.
So no, really, they would try schedule it so that the other AD would actually be calling the show when Tom would
what
be actually.
What was the budget on the X-Files? Was it a couple million?
Towards the end, it was like $2 to $3 million.
$2 to $3 million per episode.
Per episode, yeah.
And did it take about a week to shoot each episode?
It took 8 days, but then towards the end of the series, the train went off the rails pretty seriously. So we would be shooting simultaneously 4 or 5 episodes.
Wow.
Trying to get like, and there would be, normally there's a unit and then a B unit getting inserted. We had a C unit that had to go from like normally about 8 p.m. to 8 a.m.
I've never heard of a C unit.
Shooting all the other like alien special effects and all that stuff. They would have to shoot all night, basically. And sometimes your actors are called into C unit, so you'd have to work almost like a 24-hour
show. I remember when they moved the production to L.A., I was on the Universal lot.
Uh-huh.
I think I was shooting a commercial or something, but, you know, whatever, you with your little television show for 9 years. Anyhow, so I walk by. I'm like, I think that's where they're shooting, you know, X-Files. And there's, like, an alien that's being autopsied, like, just...
Just lying there?
But not even inside the studio. It's like outside, they didn't need it. Out by the trash dumpster, and there's like an alien with its guts hanging out, and I'm like, and there's nobody around it.
Right.
I could have just taken it.
You could have taken it. Get a picture taken.
Hollywood. I love Hollywood.
David Duchovny, good guy?
Good guy.
Good guy.
Yeah, he is a really good guy.
Good to hear.
He, you know, It was really, he had done California with Brad Pitt and like other movies and stuff like that, but this was his first time that it was like serious.
He'd also done many episodes of Red Shoe Diaries.
Sexy show. He's an accomplished actor.
Yeah, he's an accomplished actor.
Amazing.
But, you know, the whole thing about him moving the show down to Los Angeles, that was the big controversy.
Oh, yeah, right.
Well, it turns out.
Because it was in Canada.
It was in Canada. It was in Vancouver. And they told him, we're just shooting the pilot in Vancouver, then we're going to come down. So he kept a fully furnished apartment for 5 years in L.A., sleeping on a mattress in some other guy's basement for the first
in Vancouver.
In Vancouver.
Wow, the whole time they kept going, next year we're in L.A.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And all they had to say is, oh, yeah, we're going to shoot up there for 5 years. He would have, like, packed up the place
and
here.
Been done.
And, but instead, they just dragged him
off. Isn't that amazing? And he is the show. I mean,
he was the show, yeah.
And they weren't even telling him truthful things.
I know, because they were worried. They were worried that he was, like, maybe too big a star to actually want to stay up there for 5 years.
Right.
So they, like, they, in their mind, they thought, okay, if we just string him along, he'll stay with the show.
Because otherwise he might influence that this show ends or changes altogether.
Yeah, or they have to recast because he doesn't want to do it anymore.
You know, I don't think that most people in the world know how show business works all the time. You know, they don't realize there's these suits and there's these, you know, there's these network guys and then there's another level of guys and another level of guys. And the actors are such a small part of the,
such a
cog in the wheel, just a tiny little part.
There's a whole division.
100 people behind them backing it all up.
Yeah, and there's a whole division of accountants called TV Estimation. Do you know this?
No, I don't.
Yeah, there's a department and they're called TV Estimation. What they do is look at the schedule,
right,
and then try guess how much is going to cost so that they know how much to charge for ad rates. Like, it's a real bizarre algorithm that they have to do.
Yeah.
So if there's any production delays or any screw-ups in negotiation with the agent and stuff like that, that department starts getting heat and start getting fired. So accountants get fired.
It's just so interesting how complex it becomes, and yet the everyday person, everyday guy in Estonia, literally thinks that the actor on the show is the real guy. Like, they can't separate out.
Right, and they think that David Duchovny could just walk around and just demand everything he wanted, and he couldn't. It's like, I mean, you know, when you're, you know, if you're in a commercial or something, it's like what I realize is, especially if you're not the star of a show, and it's depending on you, if you're on a commercial or something, you're totally replaceable. You are the most elaborate prop.
Yeah.
That's what you are. It's like everything gets set up, everything, and then the very last thing is, as a joke, they go, get the talent.
Yeah, exactly.
And the talent is you're looking with a blank expression off, and they're going to cut to some CGI elephant or something.
Totally.
But it's like you are the last thing on anyone's mind on any movie
set. Talent sounds like a good thing, but it's actually the peon of the peon. The only thing below you is a PA.
Yeah. They could just say, get the mannequin.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you are screwing up a line or something like that, nobody thinks, oh, what is suffering at? They're just pissed off because it's just like, could you just say it in English and we can get out of here?
I know. My fiance had a one-line, two-line thing on Life to Live or whatever, one of the ones that's on, and she said the first time she just messed up a little bit. Did it again. Two takes. Second time she got it right. Moving on. It's a soap opera. We're going. We're moving.
We're done.
Same with the gunman. In fact, there would be single takes that we would have to do just to go, you know what? We're way over the schedule and stuff like that. Just say it and then we're out.
We're out of here. And that was it. Let me ask you about The Lone Gunman.
Yes.
This is fascinating. The way that the plot of The Lone Gunman mirrored what happened in 9/11. Could you just talk about that? And let me ask you these couple of questions up front and then you talk.
Okay.
Number one, who wrote the episode?
Right.
Whose idea was it? Yeah. And could Bin Laden, in fact, gotten his idea from that show?
Oh my gosh. You just covered the... Here's the second story.
Okay.
So the pilot of The Lone Gunman was in March of 2000, I think. And that in that pilot, we stop a plane from flying into the World Trade Center. And in the actual script that was written, the reason that the U.S. government was putting in a control to fly it in remotely to start a whole chain reaction was to start an international war on terror.
Right.
That was written.
Those were the words they used. Yeah. International war on terror. Yeah. Those words were used in the script.
Long before it was ever in the popular culture. Yeah. And so it was written by Vince Gilligan, who did Breaking Bad.
Sure.
And he was the writer on that one. And he said he got it from a Tom Clancy novel. There's a Tom Clancy novel that is referenced
in which we're at war with the Japanese, and they fly a 747 into the U.S. Capitol during the State of the Union address, I believe, and kill the president and half the Senate.
Right.
And that's how Jack Ryan becomes president.
Exactly.
But, so that was, yeah, he had already written that they actually did fly it. That was like 1995.
How old was Vince Gilligan when he wrote this, do you think?
Let's see. He was in his late 20s at that
point.
Young guy. And he had already done Home Fries with Drew Barrymore and some other movies, some indie movies.
Yeah. So but, he got the idea of the plane from...
Tom Clancy
Because that's
novel.
The first thing I thought of was like Tom Clancy novel when 9/11 happened.
When I didn't, yeah.
Although I'm sure I saw The Lone Gunman. I actually did watch that show, but I don't remember. I didn't remember that. I remember the
right. And the actual footage of it is at night, and it's coming from the Statue of Liberty side. And at the last minute, the lone gunman hack the automatic remote,
right. and then it diverts
the plane. Yeah, the plane suddenly just scratches the bottom of its hull over the top of the World Trade Center.
Right.
So that happened, and then about 2 to 3 years later, I'm at Comic-Con in San Diego, and I'm signing autographs. And I still have his business card. I don't know what happened to him, but his name was Alex Lightman. He said, I'm an author working on a novel, not just a book about the connection between Hollywood and Al-Qaeda. And he had talked to senior Al-Qaeda operatives in London, of all things, and he told me that they had a whole bunch of different plans in place, but when they saw the lone gunman, they realized that they better make that their A plan. So they just jumped up that whole thing. So
Do you think Bin Laden, I mean, could he have gotten an idea from that or from the Tom Clancy novel? I mean, it came from somewhere.
Well, you know, it's hijacking and planes. I mean, that's not...
I know, but flying into buildings and suicide bombers is not... Is not
similar? Well, maybe.
Well, I mean, yeah, basically, the Tom Clancy, I think it was basically he took the kamikaze idea from World War II, where you would fly your one-person plane into a ship and made it into a 747 flying into the U.S. Capitol. And remember, they were going to also fly into – they flew into the Pentagon, and they were going to fly into the White House.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that's the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania.
I thought it was the Capitol, not the White House. The Capitol, right?
In the book, it's the Capitol. Oh, I believe that on 9/11 they were that plane was supposedly going to the White House, the one that crashed in Pennsylvania.
I see.
But
it's so, very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really fascinating.
Do you love conspiracy theories?
Well, you know, I do actually, but it's fascinating because some conspiracy theories, I mean, they're very creative, and it seems to be a reaction of how we justify meaning, right? Like any experimental abstract artwork, you read meaning into stuff. So if I put a series of three coincidental or odd ideas, and then I can draw a line that sounds
sometimes
like a conspiracy.
It's just fun to sit around with friends drinking beers and start bullshitting conspiracies.
But it's bullshit.
Like
but people
fun.
Believe it because they're like, you know, they're almost like, you know, the government killed JFK and here's why. And it's like, the government can barely keep the roads paved.
Yeah.
Right,
are there going to be 500 agencies over the past 50 years, none of which have broken their silence, who are all going to be together in on this?
Well, you know. there is other agencies other than government.
No, that may be.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like this thing where it's like if 10 people decide to do something, I might believe that. If it involves
hundreds
of people and dozens of agencies, I never believe that one.
Right.
Because it's just human beings are too.
The bureaucracy.
There's a guy who wants to brag.
What's your favorite conspiracy theory? What's your favorite?
You know, we did this documentary called The Truth Is Out There.
Oh, right. But by the way, The Truth Is Out There, I think that site was hacked because you can't watch that trailer.
What?
You can hear... I'm not kidding you. I went and was looking into you.
Yeah.
And I go to The Truth Is Out There, the movie, and the site, and it comes up, and all it is fuzzy. You can hear the voices, but it's all fuzzed out.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding you.
Oh, my gosh.
Dun,
this is brand new.
It was last night.
This is Truth-Is-Out-There.
Truth Is Out There, the
with
movie.
Dashes,
right.
Yeah, with dashes,
right, dashes
in between.
Dashes in between.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all fuzzed out, although you can still hear because I was listening to it.
And our sales dropped off. So did they screw up with our PayPal too?
No, it's very interesting. I mean, I wonder. Let me ask you this. Do you think the everyday person should be more worried about hackers? Like people on Facebook, people giving out?
Yeah, I'm a big advocate on keeping the privacy. And you know, your iPhone, I'm not going to scare you, but you know when you signed your agreement, you agreed to third-party marketing information?
Mm-hmm.
You know they have a thing now which is considered honest consumer reaction. So if you're in the grocery store and you're near tomato soup can and Campbell's has purchased this service, your phone microphone turns on and starts transmitting without your knowledge in hopes to hear your honest consumer reaction about you hanging out near the Campbell's soup can.
In other words, spending more time looking at the product or whatever.
No, they're actually listening to you.
They're actually listening
to
you talking. Yeah, they're actually listening to your conversation, even if you're not talking about the soap. This is apparently very true.
Yeah.
This is everybody agreed to it when you sighed saying, yes, I agree to third-party marketing information being shared.
Well, it's like I said, you reacted when I saw my little Redbox story. It's like all I did was pay $1.30 on my debit card, and they have all my information. Redbox knows everything about me.
Because that magnetic strip in there is just like your phone, is a highly...
Sometimes I say to myself, Dean, I got nothing to hide. If anybody wants to know, what do they want to know? You got it, you have it, you know, I don't really care. However... I am careful about, I know this sounds stupid, but like anything like involving sexting or anything nude, you're not going to see Christine Blackburn nude out there, folks. Sorry. The word is out.
Let me talk to the 10,000 people. I'm sorry. Go away.
I'm not going to let that happen. No, but
but didn't you say that there are new photos of you somewhere in a box in a garage?
I think that's...
I'm just saying they're not electronic.
My point is that
they're Polaroids.
I'm not worried about hacking. However, I would be careful about that sort of thing. Like I have a friend who has taken some photos and they got found.
Right.
And that is not good.
No,
and
absolutely.
I think to myself, well, what the fuck are those photos for there?
Yeah, exactly.
So
this is a thin edge of the wedge that, you know, okay, so today you're okay with, you know, that, but, you know, that futurist, the Japanese guy is on TV all the time. I can't think of his name at the moment, but he talked...
Hajimoto? No, I just made that.
Is that... no.
Don't listen to
Jappy McJapperson?
Anyway, the idea in 2057 that all our toilets will be hooked to the internet because we'll have healthcare so that... If you are peeing something that you ingested the night before, like alcohol, drugs, or something like that, your insurance rates will be adjusted based on the toilet internet sending the urine samples.
Oh, I am doomed.
Wow.
Yeah, right?
Well, listen, you know, that's interesting. My buddy David Campbell, who I play tennis with, he was just telling me, hey, Christine, you got to get your shit out of my garage. You know, the pictures in the naked body.
Oh, you said
that. No, because I store this stuff in his garage. He goes, because Google's flying overhead, and they're telling State Farm Insurance whether I'm parking my car in the garage or not. And I don't park it in the garage. I park it in the driveway, and they see that, and therefore my insurance rates are up.
Right,
exactly. Can that be true?
Yeah, that can very well be true.
I said, David, you just want my shit out of your garage.
That could pretty much.
I understand.
That could be pretty much it. Can I just, speaking of buildings, this is my own transition.
Okay.
I was listening to your podcast, and you said you were in the Eastern Columbia building.
Yes, do you know
downtown. It? Yes, of course. Yeah. It's right here.
Look at that.
Why do you know that?
Because it's one of the most beautiful Art Deco buildings in Los Angeles.
Oh,
there's so many films made at this location.
Yes.
And so this is where you do your podcast.
This is my podcast.
I'm very jealous.
It's beautiful. And you see the swimming pool at the top?
Yes.
There's a pool that reflects the clock at night.
Oh, wow.
And Johnny Depp bought the penthouse, so he has that whole penthouse.
Oh, you're kidding? See, now I like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I like
Johnny
that.
Depp,
here it is.
He's in that pool. He could
be. No,
we don't know.
Never
he's naked
there.
Right now.
No, he's got his own Caribbean island and a villa in France.
And I think he lives in France mostly.
There it is. There it is. Look at that. I mean, is that gorgeous or what?
Yeah, it is gorgeous. He also has a place behind Chateau Marmont.
Yeah, he's got seven different...
Lives in David Campbell's garage.
Let's hack into Johnny Depp.
He's hacking into Johnny Depp's pants.
Dean Haglund. Do you want to play some Shotgun Story with
me? I sure do.
Can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
So I got wild card, but since we've been talking and you mentioned freaking with a PH... I will tell a freaking story that is really quick. My friend was an early phone freaker, and this had the ability that Captain Crunch cereal back in the early 80s had a whistle in it. And if you blew that whistle at certain tones into a payphone, you got free long distance around the world. So these phone freaks in a college set up the phone system, and they had their coffee table with a relay system that they hand-built so that everybody in the dorm could call around the world for free using the Captain Crunch whistle. The AT&T found this out. They finally tracked why they were losing so much money in this town. They came in. They arrested all four of them. Three of them got jobs at AT&T, and my friend buggered off. And finally, after doing porn in Chatsworth and doing those websites, he got a job at Apple as a designer. And the reason your iPhone has three icons across and four down was his idea.
Oh, my God. Yeah, wow, that was a terrific one-minute story that included, it included hacking, conspiracies.
And porn in Chatsworth.
Porn, right.
And by the way, but the thing is, from his porn days, it was three penises across and four vaginas like, down.
Because that's
and
they the size changed of your index that. Finger.
You are such an interesting man, Dean. And we have to wrap it up, but I really want to touch on your artwork.
Oh, thank you.
Because you are a stunning painter.
Thank you.
And you do many mediums.
I do, yeah. I'm doing right now a series, because I live in downtown Los Angeles, of watercolors of ancient, like rusty, from the 30s and 40s. There's this whole thing of like all these gorgeous signs that are actually hard to see.
I've seen them on your site.
Yeah, and they're like these
there are like bus tours you can take to see the neon signs and stuff like
that. Yeah, the neon signs.
Oh, you're not talking about the neon.
Mine are like the ones that are no longer functioning and they're rusting away, and so I'm capturing them in their final stages of decay.
And what are the mediums you use?
I use those I do in watercolor. But I paint in oils a lot, and then I do quick acrylic portraits and stuff like that.
And you have your stuff on sale on your website, the art, but it's not up yet, is
it? It's not up yet.
Or has it been hacked?
Well, I think it was hacked.
But you should be selling this art. I mean, you have some terrific pieces.
Thank you very much. I had a show in New York, and I had a one-man show here in L.A., and then there's a couple group shows.
You need to have a show in Estonia, obviously.
So listen, is it DeanHaglin.com?
DeanHaglin.com.
And then on Twitter is DHaglin.
DHaglin, Facebook. I'm actually going to do a whole Control-Alt-Delete of my entire online presence.
That's terrific.
And so that it'll all coalesce. And
what does that mean, a Control-Alt-Delete of everything?
You know, on your computer, you do Control-Alt and you annihilate everything. So basically all my...
Wait a minute.
Yes.
I just said terrific. You're going to wipe out everything?
No, and move it to... So there's only one.
And then rebuild it so it all converges into one sort of handy...
Your platform.
That's my platform.
You're DHaglin.
And then it'll be just DHaglin.
Well, it's just fascinating
Network.
Because this, you know, this kid over in Estonia, are these people thinking that you're a real they don't even know how much you know.
I don't.
You have so much going on, really.
Thank you so much.
A lot of talents. I'm really happy you came today.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Thank you.
All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up right about now. I'd like to thank Sean Merrick here at Sideshow Network for helping us out every darn week.
Woo-hoo.
You help out a lot of folks, don't you, Sean?
Yes,
I do. Wake up, Sean. Okay.
He's a giver. I'd also like to thank John Thomas Griffith. You know, he wrote the theme song, Follow Me, Hannes.
He hacked me recently. He brought his guitar, and he took his guitar and he hacked through my window.
Right.
We also have a guy named Joe Slepsky. He helps out the show every week. I'd like to thank him. And on behalf, of course, of our storyteller tonight, Dean Haglund, and you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host.
And, of course, Osama bin Laden.
My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Off right in your face.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.